Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
Chairs No Waiting, episode number 432. Neil Brower interviews Harvey Bullock, 2002, part one. Whew, that's a long title. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the fine folks over at WeaversDepartmentStore.com. Drop by over at Weavers and check it out. Head over to WeaversDepartmentStore.com. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. The executive producer of episode number 432 is Jonna Button. So thank you. She's one of our patrons over at Patreon. Yay! Patreon. Thank you to the Mayberry Band for our theme music. Hello, everybody. I'm Alan Newsom, your host for Two Chairs No Waiting. And it is a great night, great day to be here in Mayberry. We've got a real pleasure for you, I believe, something you're going to really enjoy. As we're going to be hearing Neil Brower. Now, it's Professor Brower. He does interviews and, not just interviews, but he does amazing interviews at Mayberry Days every year. Now, this particular one we're going to hear tonight is part one of about three or four parts, because this was a very long one. I believe the video was actually an hour and 40-something minutes long. So I've broken it up into 3 weeks and then a little bit on the fourth week just to wrap it up. But I believe you're really going to enjoy this. Now, this is writer Harvey Bullock. Harvey Bullock. Now, he wrote 31 episodes of The Andy Griffith Show, not to even mention all the other shows he wrote. All right. So we're going to hear that in just a couple of minutes. But before we start that, I want to go ahead and we're going to do our Mayberry History Report right off the bat for this episode so that we can finish up with the Neil Brower interview. This is going to be a long episode, so sit back, pause, come back later, whatever you need to do. But I hope you're going to enjoy it. I know you are. But let's go on and hear from Randy Turner.
Welcome to This Week in Mayberry History, a report by special correspondent Randy Turner of the Gomer and Cooper Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild of the Mayberry Historical Society.
Producer and writer Bob Ross was born on June the 26th, 1908. Over its eight-year life, The Andy Griffith Show had only two producers, Aaron Rubin and Bob Ross. Bob's first work on The Andy Griffith Show was as a writer. During the black and white years, he wrote five episodes, the first being the classic Barney's Physical. He also wrote the final black-and-white episode, Banjo Playing Deputy. He served as a script consultant for most of the episodes during Don Knotts' last year as a regular cast member. When original producer Aaron Rubin left to produce Gomer Pyle, USMC, the spinoff he had created, Mayberry needed a new producer. It would not be an easy task, especially with the glue Don Knotts had provided no longer being there. But Bob stepped up to the task. It could not have gone more smoothly. Andy Griffith's manager, Richard Link, who also served as an associate producer of the show, said, "I want to tell you, it was unreal. It was like we never dropped a beat, and that was unusual. Normally, you might find another producer, writer, who is talented, but doesn't fit in, or who doesn't come up with the goods. But that wasn't the case with Bob. And Bob was such a genteel man, such a nice and talented fellow, that it just flowed." While the show was never the same, having, as Andy Griffith described it, lost its heart with the loss of Barney, the show still thrived and did well in the ratings. Bob continued to serve as script consultant on most of the episodes in addition to actually being the producer for all the Color Years. Unfortunately, Bob made a misstep that is disdained by Mayberry fans to this day. It was his idea to do the class reunion episode where Thelma Lou returned to town with a husband. But he did more good than bad. In the episode Malcolm at the Crossroads, which marked the last appearance of both Malcolm and Ernest T., it was Bob who suggested the episode include our favorite rock thrower. The script had originally called for Malcolm's adversary to be a bully named Spike Jensen. Jack Dotson credits Bob as being responsible for creating the basic character of Howard Sprague, and Bob wrote or co-wrote several episodes. When Andy finally decided to leave, show sponsor General Foods was understandably not thrilled to be losing a top 10 show, which was in fact number one its final season. It was Bob who came up with the concept of what would become Mayberry RFD. Andy's manager, Richard Link, provided Ken Berry, whom he also managed. And even better financially, Link and Andy had part ownership of the spinoff. Bob wrote the final episode of The Andy Griffith Show that served as a pilot for the new series. As a result, Bob is considered the creator of Mayberry RFD. He not only served as producer of the new series, but also continued as a script consultant for most of the episodes. The show was a risk. While technically a new show in the same town of Mayberry, it was not clear it would succeed, as it was really more of a reboot of the same show with a new lead, albeit a new lead who was a widower raising a young son. Sound familiar? Mayberry fans will forever owe Bob Ross a debt of gratitude. He is largely responsible for giving us another 6 years of Mayberry, with episodes which, while not the equal of the black and white years, are still entertaining and better than much of what was to follow in episodic television. That's it for this week. As always, thanks for listening, and remember to take Andy's advice and go out there and act like somebody.
All right. So thank you, Randy. That is, as always, these reports are amazing. It's so great to hear from him. You can get a daily dose of This Week in Mayberry History with Today in Mayberry History. If you send Randy an email at turnersgrade@gmail.com, he'll set you up. All right, folks. Hey, so now to the meat of the story. Not that Randy's content was not amazing, which it always is. Great job he does. If you're watching the video version of the podcast, I didn't have pictures of Bob Ross. So if you have a picture of Bob Ross, if you'll email it to me at floyd@imayberry.com, I will put that on the website and Facebook page and stuff and post it in next week's podcast episode. But I could not find one. All the pictures of Bob Ross I could find were Bob Ross, the painter that used to be on PBS, you know, that nice little, the pretty little cloud back there and the little tree, you know, that fella. So, all right. So as I told you, the main focus of tonight's podcast or today's, whenever you're listening to this, is Harvey Bullock. And Neil Brower interviewed him back in 2002 at Mayberry Days. It was a great, great opportunity there. Now, I want to tell you that the audio is going to be a little harder to hear than normal because this video is coming off of a taped version of this of the interview. The audio and the video and everything is coming off of a taped version. I split the audio away from the video and cleaned it up as much as I could and tried to get it out. There's a few places where you're going to hear a sound like boom, 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 boom. I don't know what causes that, but it's on the original and I couldn't get it completely out. But I believe this content is well worth whatever we might have to sit through to listen to the bad areas. Definitely want to encourage you to take the time to listen to all this. It's amazing to get to hear from a person who was responsible for 31 episodes of The Andy Griffith Show and some of the best. And I know you're really going to enjoy this. So without any more talking from me, part one of Neil Brower's interview with Harvey Bullock from 2002.
We're going to have a great hour and a half together. the theme song plays. Andy and Opie are walking by the lake. It's a scene we've seen a thousand times before. The anticipation grows for the show that is about to begin. The screen momentarily is black, and then the story begins. Written words of a script come to life before our eyes. The acting is excellent. The musical score sets the mood. Carefully selected camera angles direct and focus our attention. We are transported to Mayberry. The episode begins with an idea, a storyline. And after countless hours of staring at the ceiling and hard work, the dialogue is written. The story is told. Our guest this afternoon has told his stories well. His dialogue is part of the language of Mayberry. Let me share with you just a few examples. Tuscarora, kerosene cucumbers, raspberry snow cones, the rules of the rock, winking, blinking, and nod, eagle eye Annie, aren't you kind, web-footed, red-crested lake loon, hang it on the wall. His stories have become our favorites. Listen to some of his titles. Opie's Hobo Friend, The Pickle Story, Mr. McBeebe, The Cow Thief, The Bed Jacket, The Loaded Goat, Rafe Hollister Sings, Andy's English Ballet, The Haunted House, Opie the Birdman, Barney and the Cave Rescue, Prisoner of Love, Hot Rod Otis, Andy Saves Gomer, The Return of Malcolm Merriweather, Back to Nature, and Opie's Newspaper. Let's welcome Harvey Bullock to our stage. Harvey? Started?
My ballet lessons are paying off.
Okay. We're going to start at the very beginning. Harvey, when and where were you born? It's right beside of you. Right beside of you there.
I brought my lunch.
You were saying? When and where were you born? And here's your mic. Hold your mic.
I was born back in 1907. I grew younger every minute. And it was in Oxford, North Carolina, where I was born. Well, I had to be born there. I wanted to be near my mother.
What was the occupation of your father and mother? What was the occupation of your father and mother?
Yes. My dad had gone to Trinity College, which is now Duke University, the class of 14, became a civil engineer. And he was married to my mother. We took a trip down to Greensboro one time, and we went over some of the roads he laid out for the county. The roads were going up and down like this, and we kept teasing. Why did you move like there was a cow standing in the way?
You're not driving that car, you know, it was
keep the kids quiet. He's mercilessly about that, but he was a Tar Heel, so we had to accept him.
Why did they name you Harvey? Where did that name come from, Harvey?
Well, I got it from him. And before that, I think they studied all the genealogy and found there was a Harvey that once mowed the lawn for the mayor's house. And they thought every name I feel I could use.
Started backwards. Where did you grow up, Harvey?
Well, in Binghamton, New York. First, I want to say something about Oxford. I had a letter from a Tags convert who discovered I was born in Oxford. He lived in Oxford. I got together with him. His name was Joe Haskins. And I was delighted to hear from somebody from Oxford. because I wonder what had happened in the 80 years I'd been gone. Well, the old place where we lived now would be a museum, medical building. And I asked Joe to look into it. Was there some, what did they make in the 80 years out of the Bullock place? I thought it'd be some tremendous, wonderful work. And he called me up and he said, I found the property. Joe, are you here?
I am.
Joe, stand up, Joe. I called you and said, did you find the property? He said, what? Yes.
It's a vacant lot.
There wasn't any little plaque saying the Bullock place, and I think a little brass plaque. None of that?
Just a vacant lot. Okay.
Sit down, Joe. So much for famous.
Where did you grow up, Harvey? Binghamton?
Binghamton.
Binghamton. You can tell I'm from the South.
Binghamton, New York. Let's see, I made a note about Binghamton, New York. Where did I grow up? In Binghamton, New York. I left Oxford when I was only 3 years old, and I finally found out about Southern hospitality. Stayed in New York. Your question was, what were my childhood interests?
Okay, so he's already got the questions out. What were your childhood interests and hobbies?
Funny you should ask. Writing down my childhood interests was one of my childhood interests.
Yeah.
And the other were sports, bikes, tree houses, and pestering my sister's boyfriend my full time.
How did you become a comedy writer, Harvey?
I wish I knew. Actually, what it was, I think, goes back to junior high school. When I entered there, and I got a sports column, sports editor. And I found a name for it, which I think everybody can remember. Can you guess what it was?
It's Pickups.
Picked up and splashes from floor and pool. Well, can you improve on that at all? And it was a sports column, but I just wrote things, goofy things that the kids did. And I found I loved working with words. They were really powerful and imaginative. So I guess that's where it all started. We can blame them.
Tell us a little bit about your early days in Hollywood and in California, and what were some of the writing credits that you had before The Andy Griffith Show?
Well, I'll try to make this brief. I was in the Navy during World War I. You must have heard about that. It was in all the papers. I got home. My dad had been transferred to New Jersey. And that was right next to Manhattan. And that's where the island of magic began. I was going to go over and somehow get in the broadcast industry and write shows. So I commuted back and forth. And eventually I did a Landis show on CBS, afternoon show. And at the same time, another one paid off. I got a job at NBC with the Dave Barraway Today Show. And here I go on so long with no shows, and now I had two of them. And the Today Show, I had to go to work at 4 in the morning. And I was through at 9 in the morning. The rent was paid. But it had another plus to it. I met the fashion editor of the Today Show, Betty Folker. And I proposed to her almost immediately, if not faster. She's sitting right down in the front row. Would you like to meet her?
Now, Harvey, what were some of the shows that you wrote before The Andy Griffith Show?
Well, quite a ton. I was working on the variety show for Robert K. Lewis. And I worked on Who Do You Trust with Johnny Connor, Johnny Parsons. But it seemed that all the work was going to be, I also took 6 months in London, and then we worked on a show with my new partner, Ray Allen. But we saw that the power was coming out of Hollywood. That was the answer. We had to work there. So we wrote a script. And sold it to NBC. We said, come on, we'll take it and put it on there. We were terribly excited. We got to Hollywood, they found out that all they wanted to buy was the the idea. They didn't think we were qualified enough to write the script. After we'd written the script, this is Hollywood for you. And so we were very disappointed in that. Our first venture, my partner went back to England, and Benny and I got married, and we were both working on the Today Show then. And Dave Garraway, bless his heart, on the day we were going to get married, Betty had been working since 4 in the morning, was dog tired. I'd been with 4 in the morning. He motioned to the cameraman, come and follow him around backstage. She and I were talking innocently enough, and he said to 6 million viewers, "I'd like you to meet today's lovers, Harvey and Betty. Isn't that wonderful?" And he passed on. We're standing there like 2 idiots. And he totally destroyed our honeymoon. Everywhere we went to try to hide up, they'd say, "There they are, today's lovers." I thought we were going to have a childless relationship. He thought it was very funny. Well, to finish up the and the three Andy Griffith is out in Hollywood. My partner had gone back to London. I was driving a rent-a-wreck car, and I lived in a dismal old motel in the Sunset Strip. And it was just trying to, and my wife and 3 daughters were back in New York waiting for me to find work. And it was a tense time. And my agent somehow, bless your heart, got me a meeting with Aaron Rubin, who was the producer of the Andy Griffith Show. In 2 days I was to meet with him. And I spent the 2 days staring at that hole in the ceiling, trying to get story ideas. There's so much rested on this. This man was a powerhouse in Hollywood. And anyone getting a writing job on the Andy Griffith Show would immediately be available to other producers that all want him. Because it was a winnowing process. So I knew this was a vital thing to come through with. And I met him and I was very nervous. Everything was crossed, my stomach, my toes. But he was very understanding, being a former writer himself, and worked with me, and from it came that day, Opie's Humble Friend. I had an assignment to write. I had reached my goal all the time beforehand. And I drove out of the studio and the wheels never touched the ground. I never felt a high like that in my life. I try to tell that to my kids. Drugs and things will never be an accomplishment in theater entertainment. They used to listen to it a little bit, but anyway, that's what I tell them.
Where did the idea for the Hobo Friend script come from, Harvey?
Well, I'd always enjoyed attitudes of older people. Geezers I thought were very wise old men. And I kept thinking they were wise old men until I became one. They were sort of colorful, and so working with that, we had the Buddy Epson character, if you remember the show. And he was marvelous. And Opie was marvelous, and we used some more funny words there. Tuscarora, which I mentioned, we said, where did he get that from? That was the name of a mountain range near Binghamton. When we were on a family outing, my dad would drive up to the top of this mountain and start down the other side. It's called Tuscarora Mountain. He would turn off the car key, the ignition, illegally, and we would all yell, "Tuscarora!" and come coasting down the hill. So that the word stuck in my mind because I found out later it was also good for opening up the bubblegum machines.
But we're going to see that scene right now. This is the Tuscarora scene from Opie's Hobo Friend.
Get on in there. Come on. Come on. Stay right there. Stand right there. Second thought, come over here in the middle of the room. Come on.
What's the trouble, Barney?
No trouble. Just booking this man on a bag charge.
Bag?
Vagrant.
Oh.
I caught him down at the freight yard, you know, hanging around down there. Looked like he was going to hook a ride, maybe slip out of town, you know. Get out on. So I nabbed him and brought him in here.
All right, you there, next! Come on, step up here to the desk. I'll move!
Now, this here is the High Sheriff. You state your name.
David Brown, with an E. How you doing, Sheriff? How's the fishing?
Oh, just fair. Caught a couple of little ones. How about you?
I didn't do that good.
Water's a little muddy, I guess.
I got rid of the bait, Pa.
Good.
Hi, did your magic fish talk work on the other side of the lake?
What is this?
Oh, we run into Mr. Brown when we was fishing this morning. But What brings you to our part of the country?
Oh, vacation, fishing and stuff like that. Getting away from business worries.
Business? He ain't got a cent on him.
I seldom carry more than $50 in cash. Matter of fact, I find it's better not to carry any money at all. And I'll show you why. May I have a coin?
Sure.
You see, when I have money, I find that it always, disappears. But then when I need money, I find there's always a little sum around somewhere. So why carry any?
Is there any more in there?
Oh, yeah, lots more, but why take it out? It would only, disappear again. Just a little trick.
Gosh.
Pretty good, too. Huh, Barn? Huh.
Can you do it, Barney?
Well, of course I can do it any old time. Let's book him, Sheriff.
What's wrong, Paul?
Oh, no, nothing wrong. No, Mr. Brown just wanted to find out if the sheriffing department's on its toes, and I told him we are night and day, and that we can assure him that he won't have any trouble in Mayberry. That is the understanding, ain't it?
Couldn't have stated it better. May I say that your confidence is well placed. I, too, am a disciple of law and order. Good day, gentlemen.
Oh, Miss Brown.
Yes?
I'd say one disappearance trick's plenty.
Oh, yeah. Certainly.
Yeah.
Andy, you let him slip right through your fingers.
Opie, why don't you go down and try your luck on the gumball machine down the street?
They're bad for my teeth.
Well, one won't hurt you.
I'd rather listen anyhow.
You rest your ears and work your jaw. Go on.
Okay, Paul.
Okay. Now, chew it. Don't swallow it.
Okay.
Ain't no use to run him down in front of the boy. Anyhow, the man's just passing through, and we don't aim to pester folks that may be a little bit down on their luck.
Andy, he's no ordinary hobo. He's too slick. He might even be a member of some mob. You know, they never did clean up all that Capone gang. He might be Mr. Big himself.
Well, what would Mr. Big be doing in Mayberry?
Well, plenty. Hideout. Maybe he got shot up and he come here to recover. Well, it happens all the time.
Suit yourself, Barney, but I think you're in for a big disappointment. He sure looks harmless to me.
Yeah, well, it's just the same. I'm going to keep these baby blues wide open. Very wide open.
These look very nice. But then again, these have prizes. Why don't you have both?
Well, I only got one penny.
But you don't need any money, as long as you have the magic touch and know the magic word.
Is it like fish talk?
No. No, this is gumball talk. You see, I put one hand under here. Now, you watch that hand. And with the other hand, I reach back here. Then, I say the magic word. Tuscarora. There you are.
Say, that's pretty nifty. How's it work?
Well, you say the magic word, you get the magic touch, and the gumball machine gives me the gumball.
But ain't that cheating?
Cheating? Oh, my, no, no, no. Why, this little machine doesn't want your money. What would a gumball machine use money for? Does it have to buy food? Does it have to buy clothes? Or roller skates? Or go to the movies? No, no, it doesn't want your money at all.
It don't even have to buy gum.
So, whether you put in a penny or just give it a pat with a hand, it's just as happy either way. Have another? Tuscarora! Another? Tuscarora!
We're going to see another scene from Opie's Hobo Friend. The conclusion of the second act. I think this is a wonderful example of Harvey's writing. He can be very comical with his writing, but he also can be very dramatic. And the scene begins with Andy talking with Mr. Dave about the bad influences he has had upon Opie. And it's very dramatic. There's no laugh anywhere in this scene or the one that follows when Dave is put into jail. Let's see this thing. It's very, very well done.
Well, Sheriff, it's an honor. Where's Opie?
He's in school.
Drag up someone and sit down. I'm making a new fish lure. I gave the other one I had to Opie.
Yeah, he showed it to me when he told me about the chicken dinner.
Well, that, too bad about that poor bird. Run down the middle of the road by a new sports car. I tried to get the license number, but you understand all that dust and everything.
What run over the pie?
The pie was the pie, yeah.
Well, that's not why I'm here.
Good.
It's about Opie.
Something wrong?
Yeah, there's something wrong.
You ate too much?
No, it goes a little deeper than that.
Well, what is it? You know, I've grown awful fond of that young fellow. What's wrong?
Well, there seems to be something wrong with his thinking. He's gotten a little twisted on things lately. Like being able to tell the difference between right and wrong.
Oh.
Not that that's an easy thing. A lot of grown-ups still struggling with that same problem. But it's especially difficult for a youngster. Because things rub off on them so easy.
I see. You're suggesting that maybe I'm not fit company for Opie?
That would seem to be the case.
Well, Sheriff, maybe I do look at things differently than other people. Is that wrong? I live by my wits. I'm not above bending the law now and then to keep clothes on my back or food in my stomach. I live the kind of life that other people would just love to live if they only had the courage. Who's to say that the boy would be happier your way or mine? Why not let him decide?
No, I'm afraid it don't work that way. You can't let a young'un decide for himself. He'll grab at the first flashy thing with shiny ribbons on it. Then when he finds out there's a hook in it, it's too late. Wrong ideas come packaged with so much glitter, it's hard to convince him that other things might be better in the long run. And all a parent can do is say, wait, trust me. And try to keep temptation away.
That means that you're inviting me to leave.
That's right.
Well, you're wearing a badge, so I leave. That wasn't so difficult. Your problem solved.
That's where you're wrong. That boy thinks just about everything you do is perfect. So my problem's just beginning. You've left behind an awful lot of unscrambling to be done.
Now look here.
Goodbye, Mr. Dave.
Come on. No two ways about this time, Sheriff. Caught him with the goods. Purse snatcher.
A purse snatcher? Whose is it?
You can just about guess. It's Aunt B's. Got her name in it. No tricks from you now.
Opie, maybe you better wait outside for a few minutes.
You mean you took Aunt B's pocketbook? Mr. Dave, you did that? That's where she keeps money to buy food.
How'd it happen?
Well, I was out on patrol, and he run right out in front of me, carrying this woman's pocketbook. I told you I was going to keep these open, and I did. Everything just clicked, fell right into place, and I realized that this wasn't his. Boy, he played it just like he wanted to get nabbed.
He did, huh?
Yeah. All right, come on, let's go. Right over there. Let's go, right? Let's go. I'm saving the other cell for the rest of the gang.
You really stole it?
maybe you better drive him home.
Yeah. I'll tell Aunt Bea about the pocketbook.
Like that's pretty careless for a man that lives by his wits.
Sheriff, you got your evidence, you got your man. What more do you want?
Well, there may be one other thing it might be worth mentioning. I happen to know that this is a pocketbook it might be threw out in the trash. Be the 345 stopping for water. No law I know of against trash collecting. Mr. Dave, I'd say you got a train to catch.
Suit yourself.
Oh, I sure do appreciate
the sheriff. Like you say, I got a train to catch. You don't want your deputy to pick me up for loitering, do you?
Yeah.
To see your written word come alive on the screen like that through excellent acting and a musical score that focuses the mood and the attention of the scene and also camera angles. What's that feel like to see your words come alive?
Well, the first one you do, Mr. Shell, you go over the scene there, you expect to see three or four people. And I counted the people who make the show. There are 87 of them. I think all this is something that I've got from staring at a hole in the ceiling. Can't three people make the show one of the classic things? And I was just astounded at the complexity of it and the care that went into every minute, every second of the film. And they were very fortunate in the camera crew. You mentioned the camera angles. They were so good, they were not never noticed. That's some sign they were good in the camera angles. You never really think of it. And as the performers, well, we don't have to talk about that much. We know Andy and Aunt Bea and Barney and Opie. And said, I must say there was another word that I like that we used, and Andy may have caught on, where the tramp gives him a fishing hook and he calls him his gallywobbler. He said, where did gallywobbler come from? Well, maybe some of you people have heard of gallywobbler. And Binghamton, when your stomach was upset, you had the gallywobbler. So I thought it would make a good name for the fishing
boat. All right. So, folks, that is the end of part one of the interview with Harvey Bullock. I hope you guys are enjoying that. I know I am. I know the episodes are running a little long, but I hope you're really enjoying that. Again, the audio, I realize it's a little bit not quite as clear. Harvey would not hold his mic up to his face. If you watch the actual video version of the podcast, which will be available, you can go to our Facebook page at, or not Facebook, our website at twochairsnowaiting.com and go to this episode, which is episode number 432, and you'll be able to see the video. It's right there on the page. You can go to YouTube and watch it as well. So, folks, hey, I am so glad to be able to bring these to you. Neil Brower had asked if we could bring them to you. I want to thank Neil and Pat Coleman. They provided me the video. Neil did. So that's Neil Coleman and his wife, Pat. They provided me this video. And so we're all getting the benefit of that. So thank them if you see them. Folks, I want to thank you for being here with me. It's always a lot of fun to be here in Mayberry with you. I want to ask that if you would like to, I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what you think about this episodes. We got two more, plus a little bit of a fourth one. So we got a lot of information coming from Harvey. We got a lot of clips from the Andy Griffith Show, like tonight. the Opie's hobo friend, had a good bit of that. So friends, we're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be almost educational for us, and I know you're going to enjoy it. Give me a call at 888-684-8415. Let me know what you're thinking. On that fourth episode, maybe I can play a lot of your comments, and I will love to hear from you. You know all the ways to get to me, so head over there and do it. And go over to patreon.com if you think you're getting something out of this podcast, and support the show. Talk to you later.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.